This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 320 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a summary of some of the latest developments in Gaza and the West Bank. And we'll also share some reportage highlights from the Electronic Intifada's contributors there. Israeli forces attacked areas across the Gaza Strip this past week, including in Jabalia in the north, Deir al-Balah, Nuseirat, and Burej refugee camp in the center, and Al-Mawasi, Rafah, and Khan Yunis in the south. On Tuesday, the Israeli army committed yet another massacre in a school being used as a shelter for displaced people in Gaza City, killing at least 12, according to the Gaza government media office. Also on Tuesday in Deir al-Balah, at least 10 Palestinians were killed in two separate airstrikes on a densely populated market in the middle of the city. Al Jazeera's Hind Kurari reported that, quote, most of those who were wounded were children. We saw them in the hospital, in the corridors, lying on the ground, covered in blood and waiting for doctors. At the same time, we know that since Israeli forces took over the Philadelphia corridor, there has been no medical supplies entering Gaza, and that's why the number of casualties is expected to rise, she reported. Around the same time in Khan Yunis, she added, Israeli forces targeted an area people use for internet and battery charging, leading to four Palestinians being killed and many more wounded. The Israeli military spokesperson Daniel Hagari announced on Tuesday that the army expanded the ground invasion into Khan Yunis and north to the outskirts of Deir al-Balah. Today, Wednesday, the Israeli military issued new evacuation orders in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza, Al Jazeera reports, where hundreds of thousands of Palestinians displaced by the fighting have sought shelter. Israeli forces then fired into the crowds, killing at least one person and wounding several others, medics and residents said. Our contributor Abu Bakr Abed tweeted just hours ago that, quote, tanks are now bombing Deir al-Balah mercilessly and bulldozers continue to erase lands east. People are terrified. People can't take it anymore. The Gaza government media office stated on Tuesday that the recent massacres, quote, come within the framework of completing the crime of genocide that the occupation uses many policies to meet, including the policy of targeting civilians in shelters and displacement centers and targeting civilian gatherings. Earlier in the week, Israel attacked other areas in Deir al-Balah, killing at least 30 people in three attacks between August 17th and 18th. Israel also bombed the Beach refugee camp near Gaza City, killing at least 9 Palestinians, including children, and the Zawada neighborhood of Gaza City, where Israel bombed a shelter for displaced families. On Thursday, Israel bombed Jabalia refugee camp, killing at least 7 and injuring 20. On Friday, Israel targeted the Hamad City Towers, a residential complex in northern Khan Yunis that was completed in 2016, located on land where Israel had maintained illegal settlement colonies until 2005. Israeli forces had besieged most of the apartment towers already in March during its six-month invasion of Khan Yunis.
La ilaha illallah.
Hamad!
As people fled Hamad City and other areas in Khan Yunis seeking any place that could be a safe shelter, Israel announced new displacement orders, pushing people who have been displaced over and over again into an area that has shrunk to 11% of the Gaza Strip. Journalist and researcher Maha Husseini stated on Sunday that around 1 million Palestinians are now in Deir al-Balah following the latest displacement orders, concentrating nearly half of Gaza's population into a town that lacks even the most basic infrastructure and is also under Israeli bombardment. Dr. Mostafa Al-Masri, a psychiatrist, stated that his team was forced to relocate twice in less than 12 hours. Quote, Zionists are chasing us around in circles, he said. Two more journalists were killed this week in Israeli attacks, bringing the number of reporters and media workers killed since October to 170. On Tuesday, photographer and journalist Hamza Abdulrahman Murtaza was killed in the airstrike on the Mustafa Hafez School in Gaza City. Hamza was the brother of Yasser Murtaza, the videographer and reporter who was executed by an Israeli sniper during the Great March of Return in 2018. Journalist Ibrahim Marwan Muharib was killed on Sunday when Israeli forces fired at a group of journalists gathered in Hamad City in Khan Yunis. Muharib worked for several international media outlets. In that same attack, Israeli forces shot journalist Salma Al-Kadoumi. She was injured but survived. The United Nations delivered fuel to the northern Gaza Strip to help keep essential services like bakeries and health facilities running, according to the UN on Monday, though the amount delivered by the convoy, they said, was, quote, far from enough. Severe shortages of fuel, medications, and medical supplies continue, especially in the north, where Israel has completely destroyed entire neighborhoods and necessary infrastructure. United Nations spokesperson Louise Wateridge filmed this video of the landscape in northern Gaza on Tuesday. Any building fully intact stands out. Hundreds of thousands of homes and lives destroyed. Stories of children, mothers, fathers, even entire families still buried underneath rubble. Cities are now graveyards. Strikes are now relentless. The day starts with people checking if family and friends are still alive and ends hoping they make it through the night. Destruction on such staggering scale that minimal structures remain. With nowhere else to turn, displaced families live among rubble. As we've been reporting, physicians and international health organizations have warned that because of the destroyed infrastructure, lack of sanitation, and Israel's ongoing prevention of basic hygiene supplies from entering Gaza, irreversible diseases and epidemics are taking hold. The Ministry of Health in Gaza this week has reported the first case of the poliovirus in a 10-month-old child. Our senior editor, Maureen Claire Murphy, reports that aid agencies and medical professionals are calling for a ceasefire to administer the polio vaccine to 640,000 children under the age of 10 in Gaza after a case was confirmed in the territory. It's the first case of polio in Gaza in 25 years, CNN reported. The highly contagious disease mainly affects young children, and serious cases can lead to permanent paralysis and death. Dozens of international aid groups and medical professionals stated on Tuesday that, quote, at least 50,000 children born during the past 10 months of hostilities are highly unlikely to have received any immunizations due to the collapsed health system. Last week, the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, and the World Health Organization requested humanitarian pauses for 7 days to allow for 2 rounds of vaccinations in Gaza. Without the humanitarian pauses, the two UN agencies said, the delivery of the campaign will not be possible. Worryingly, 3 children presenting with suspected acute flaccid paralysis, a common symptom of polio, have since been reported in the Gaza Strip, UNICEF and the World Health Organization added. Now that polio is confirmed in Gaza, quote, children do not have the luxury of time, said Save the Children. A polio vaccine campaign must reach at least 95% of targeted children to be effective, according to the aid groups and doctors. Quote, this cannot happen in an active war zone, they said. For much more on this story, read Maureen Claire Murphy's latest report, Ceasefire Needed to Avert Mass Polio Outbreak in Gaza, on electronicintifada.net. This week, we'll highlight 2 recent features published by our writers in Gaza, focusing on parents and children and their direct experiences living under constant bombardment. Jumana Taisir writes that Ali Al-Aswad, 23, and his cousin Mohammed, 21, counted the shells as they exploded around their home in Gaza's Jabalia refugee camp in December. The Israeli army had launched a major offensive on the camp, and the barrage of shells was constant and terrifying. The cousins, Jumana writes, counted 13 to 15 explosions per minute. The family was forced to leave home at 6 a.m. due to the ongoing barrage. Their first stop was a distribution point run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, or UNRWA. Yet by 1 p.m., missiles had already struck a nearby mosque. They were forced to flee once more, this time to an UNRWA school. It felt like the only thing between them and certain death were the walls of the school. The Al-Aswad family was finally told they could return home nearly 2 weeks later. That morning, quote, a truck came to pick up our belongings, he said. Mattresses, bags, and everything we had brought with us. My older brother and my cousin Mohammed insisted on taking the truck despite my pleas to go myself. 16 minutes later, tragedy would strike. Israeli missiles targeted residential blocks in Jabalia camp that included the home of the Al-Aswad family. That was from Jumana Taisir's feature, A Family Tragedy in Jabalia Refugee Camp. And our contributor, Fida Al-Kedra, wrote a personal story this week about her daughter, Rita. She writes, quote, for Rita, I've always chosen everything carefully. Her beautiful room, her toys, her dresses, and her clothes, her hairstyles, her kindergarten. I was proud of myself and her father as we tried with all our might to provide our daughter with a healthy and safe environment, surrounded by warmth and love in which she could grow up far from all the conflicts and challenges that we parents live in, an environment fertile with wars. Now my daughter is experiencing genocide at a very young age. Instead of growing up in an atmosphere of love and safety and exercising her right to learn and play, she has lived through over 300 days of continuous bombing, displacement, hunger, and disease. I, as a mother, have lived with 9 months of anxiety about my daughter and her future. Her simplest needs have become a major challenge. We have suffered a lot in obtaining appropriate food, clothes, and clean water for our children. I live this war as a journalist, as a mother, and as a woman. I'm not used to it yet. Whenever I see a child's corpse, it reminds me of the danger facing my daughter here and the sad truth that our children's lives have no value as long as the world watches the killing of their childhood and remains silent. Read more from Fida Al-Kedra's feature, Genocide in a Child's Mind, on electronicintifada.net. And turning to the occupied West Bank, Israel shot and killed Mahmoud Ibrahim Al-Haroub, an 18-year-old youth in Dura, south of Hebron, on Monday. The Wafa news agency reported that Israeli forces stormed the town, sparking confrontations during which the occupation soldiers fired live bullets, sound bombs, and toxic gas at the young men, which led to the injury of 2 young men by bullets, one of whom was Al-Haroub, in addition to dozens of suffocation injuries. With the killing of Al-Haroub, the number of slain Palestinians in the West Bank, including occupied Jerusalem, since October 7th, has risen to 636, including 147 children. At least 5,400 Palestinians have been injured in the same time period, Wafa reports. Meanwhile, Israeli forces continued to demolish houses and structures as its top lawmakers boasted of plans to build a new illegal settlement colony on the land of Batir, an ancient Palestinian village west of Bethlehem, and the village of my colleague Ali Abu Nima's father's family. According to the Times of Israel, quote, the establishment of Nahal Heletz was formally approved by the government in June this year, along with the retroactive legalization of 4 West Bank outposts. The order was celebrated by extremist right-wing finance minister Bezalel Smotrich, who said it would help connect Jerusalem to the Gush Etzion settlement block, one of the largest colonies in the occupied West Bank. Batir was designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site 10 years ago. The UN Human Rights Office has said it is, quote, alarmed by Israel's recent and ongoing settlement expansion and legal changes in the occupied West Bank, measures which fly in the face of international law, including a landmark ruling by the International Court of Justice in July. And finally, we wanted to bring you some images and videos from journalists and others in Gaza that highlight the resilience, joy, and determination of the Palestinian people. Our dear contributor, Abu Bakr Abed, posted this video of the moon in Deir al-Balah on Monday night with the caption, "Here's my area. We're physically on the dark side, but we are spiritually shining on the bright side. Keep protesting, boycotting, divesting, and acting. The moon is a source of hope for us, not only light. You're our moon, he said. And displaced Palestinian children played and cuddled with cats and dogs in a shelter last week as part of an animal therapy initiative in Deir al-Balah. Middle East Monitor said that Basmet Amal Center held this session to help Palestinian children with special needs who had to leave their homes due to Israeli attacks. And a similar event took place in southern Gaza, organized by the Sulala Animal Rescue Group. They said, quote, "We brought a puppy and a cat for the children to meet. Some of them responded by bringing their own pets." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza.
You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.